You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by the MLB.com Shop.
Welcome to MLB.com Extras, the San Diego Padres. I am Allison Sutter from MLB.com, and I am joined by my friend and colleague, Corey Brox, who covers the Padres for MLB.com. And Corey, we are inching toward the winter meetings, and we are far enough from the 2014 regular season where now everybody is focusing on what's going to happen next. So we talked about it a little bit, but let's do a little warm-up to what could happen at the winter meetings. And I know that the Padres, they want to trade for a bat. They need offense. But I keep hearing that Ian Kennedy might be the trade bait that they use to in order to get this bat. And it makes me nervous when I hear that you might want to trade pitching to get hitting, because it's sort of one of those rules that you just don't do that. But I guess the Padres are in a situation where they kind of feel like maybe they have to, that they're going to have to give up something valuable and they have to get some offense into their lineup. What do you think about that?
Allison, that's a good point. And I think that's kind of the internal struggle, or I should say probably the internal discussion, not a struggle, of in the conversations that they're having and that they've been having is it's kind of trading asset for asset. And, you know, you're weakening yourself to get a strength there. And then certainly they need to make some offensive upgrades. No, you know, no qualms about that. That this is no secret. They've said it over and over again. They need to improve the offense. There's various ways you could do that, certainly. Free agency trades internationally. They'll explore all those, and they may touch upon all those. We'll have to see. Again, this has never been an organization that's really dabbled very heavily in free agency. So, you know, trade may be the best way or the easiest way for them to address their needs. But, you know, I think they're looking at a lot of different avenues with this, and one of which may be hang on to your pitching and maybe circle the wagons a little bit and hang on to your assets and try and make some headway in some different areas. And it's going to be interesting. I'm really curious. I think the conversation's turned maybe a few times, from my understanding, down there at Petco Park in terms of what they want to do, who they're thinking of moving, who they're thinking of hanging on to. And I'm not sure. I'm not sure they've arrived at that decision yet. You know, I think some conversations took place at the general managers meetings in Phoenix recently, and it will continue to that dialogue will continue to take place right up until winter meetings and even beyond that. So this could be a late developing market for the Padres, and certainly you don't want to get left behind, but I think it's evolving, and I think it's ongoing, and I don't think there's one easy answer as to how they're going to go about addressing these needs.
Yeah, I mean, you can deal from a source of strength. I mean, they definitely could have the upper hand. You know, as you and I know, and most people who cover baseball, that a lot of the rumors that you hear these days at this time of year are just rumors, and 99% of them don't go anywhere. But let's discuss some of these rumors. I mean, you see the Royals, they're looking to replace James Shields. You see the Rangers, they need a kind of a top-of-the-rotation guy to pair with Yu Darvish. So there is a need. I mean, there's always going to be a need for starting pitching. It's very rare that that somebody, you know, like a premium starter is really even made available. So I guess in that respect, I mean, it wouldn't hurt the Padres to have the discussions and just to really aim high and see how outlandish they can get. And maybe, you know, maybe a deal is actually struck.
Yeah, and if we're talking Ian Kennedy, and I think at this point, as we sit here on, you know, in November now, in mid-November, mid to late November, I think if he's the guy, you're looking at a guy that's been very durable, you know, has pitched very well in the National League, you know, has thrown a lot of innings, got himself back up on the map after he had that fabulous year in Arizona a few years ago, and you know, winning 21 games in that ballpark is quite a feat. I'm still not quite sure how he did that or how anybody really did that. No knock on him, but just really how anyone won 21 games in that bandbox. But I had a very nice year. His numbers inside were very good last year. The strikeouts were up. The walks were down. And, you know, I think he can make you know what you're getting with him, I guess, is the thing. And if you're looking for an innings eater, and if you're looking to replace somebody that you've lost, and you need someone to fill those innings, kind of a, you know, 3-4 pitcher in your rotation, he'd be an awful nice fit for you. again, it's just how much do you value him? How much do you want to give up in order to pick him up? You know, he's arbitration eligible again. He's probably going to make close to with his raise. He's going to make close to $10 million. So there's a financial component to this as well. So these are all kind of factors I think a prospective team has to weigh at this point.
What is Petco Park? What kind of reputation does it have these days? I mean, you know, I'm far away from it. I'm not really there very much. But just, I mean, I remember when it opened and it was just considered like, you know, a pitcher's haven. And, you know, so hard to hit the ball out of. You know, how do hitters feel about that ballpark? And do you think that has any effect on their ability to maybe court free agent hitters to even want to come there?
Yeah, that's a real fair question, Allison. You know, and a couple of years ago, they moved the fences in right before the 2013 season, moved the fences in right field and out in the left center, but most notably in right field, 10, 11 feet, created kind of a party deck out there. They call it the Jack Deck. It's sponsored by Jack Daniels. But that's been the most notable change there. And, you know, they've seen a increase of, you know, what they call new fence home runs, I guess. I think there was 21 of them 2 years ago, 16 last year. Of course, run scoring down around the league. And Padre pitching very good. Padre hitting not very good last year. So I think a lot of that kind of conspired to lead to a little bit of a downturn there. But, you know, it's not as people don't refer to it as Petco National Park like they used to. It's it plays a little bit more fair. The move was made to get it to play a little bit closer to neutral. It's not completely neutral. It'll always be a pitcher's park. They're making some alterations in left field with the seating bowl. It's going to move the fence in about 3 feet. It's really small. That's not a huge deal, but that's the first change they've made there. But that was more because of the seating bowl. The change they made before 2013 was to address some issues with in terms of run scoring and things like that. So I don't think it's scaring people away like it once did. And talking with manager Bud Black and a few other people, he hasn't heard the chatter from hitters and from opposing managers and from people in the zone clubhouse about the fence and about, you know, being cheated. I think if you square a ball up at Petco Park, you will be rewarded now. And I'm not so sure that was really the case only a couple of years ago. I mean, they have some certain factors here you're dealing with, Allison, and one of which we talked about before is that large body of water that sits outside the ballpark known as the Pacific Ocean with the marine layer that we get here in April and May, especially night games after 8 o'clock. The ball just doesn't travel very well. But, you know, during the day, very fair ballpark. And I think the fence changes they've made is sort of erase that stigma that this is an unfair ballpark.
You know, it always kind of boggles my mind when a ballpark would open and then there would be like the fences would be either ridiculously far or ridiculously far in. I mean, I remember in Houston when they opened Minute Maid Park or Enron Field at the time, and you know, the left field wall was a third, and it actually worked against them because then all the right-handed hitters tried to become pull hitters to get the ball out of the ballpark, and then they messed up their swing. But it kind of surprises me, like, why would they – I mean, this is going, you know, way back, but why would they even start with a ballpark with fences that far? They had to have known that it was going to have a residual effect on the hitters, no?
Well, exactly. And that's, you know, the other thing that's taken place down here in San Diego since the ballpark was built in 2004 – is the landscape outside the stadium, out beyond left center field, the openness of the ballpark has changed in terms of the buildings that have gone up. And I think it changed sort of the wind pattern of what they originally thought of. You know, a lot of condos have gone up, a lot of building office spaces and all that. And I think that has surprised the team and probably the ballpark design crew that put all this together that hadn't considered that. So I think, you know, there's some factors out there that weren't necessarily considered because they just didn't, you know, had no idea of knowing how this would work out. But I think some of the civic growth, if for lack of a better term, has affected some of this as well. And, you know, I'm sure they looked into marine layer and all that and the dense air and all that, but until they got a chance to witness it, how it adversely affected the ball during the ball path during a game. There was no real way of knowing that. So, you know, now they have a pretty good sample size, and now they've got 2 years of data to look at with the new fence now. And it's played out sort of like they thought it would. And like I said, everyone seems to think that it's been fair, and it will continue to play fair moving forward.
I thought it was funny. I just read an article like Andrew Kashner would aim. He's like aiming to be the first Padre to throw a no-hitter. I guess it was kind of funny that I remember talking to you about this like a few months ago. Just is there like this thing? Is it a thing among the fans, the media? Does it get talked a lot that the Padres are the only team that has not thrown a no-hitter in its team's history? I guess, you know, if we're talking about these fences, I mean, you think that maybe somebody would have thrown a no-hitter because it would be easier to do it there. But is that a thing that gets talked about a lot? And do you think that, I mean, what if like a Padres pitcher that had a great knowledge of the history of this team, what if he gets to like the eighth inning and ninth inning? I mean, does it get in his head like, oh my God, like I know that I'm going to be the first one to do this? You think it would kind of, you know, work counterintuitively?
What's funny is there's some sort of statistic, Allison. I don't really have it at my fingertips here, but they've had like a lot, and I'm not sure what the number is, but they've had a lot of close calls, like a lot of heartbreakingly
wow.
close calls where they, you know, they've gotten this thing fairly close, and Kashner certainly had a couple close situations, one hit shutouts and all that, but you know, if there's anybody that's going to do it, it's probably him or Tyson Ross, just because their stuff is so electric. But it's funny. And, you know, you hear this in the press box where, you know, maybe a Padre pitcher gives up a hit in the first inning and they're like, well, there goes the no-hitter. There goes the no-hit bit tonight, folks. you know, see you tomorrow. But, yeah, it's kind of quirky. I think I don't think they're the only team, but they haven't hit for the cycle either. No one's hit for the cycle in
really?
History. Yeah, so it's you're right. Yeah, the ballpark itself, if anyone's going to do it, you think they would do it at Petco Park, where you can get away with some fly balls and you know, play some good defense there, and you get a guy getting a lot of strikeouts. You think about all those big Jake Peavy games and you know, other guys that have pitched well there, that it would have happened by now. But you know what's going to happen, of course. It's like some no-name random guy is going to toss one. They're going to bring a guy up from AAA and he's going to have the start of his career, and then we'll never hear from him again or something ridiculous. That's sort of how these things work, right?
Or it'll be just the Padres luck. He'll be like, you know, the big stud, the next guy coming up, and he'll be on a pitch count. So he'll be like at 100 pitches in the seventh inning, and they're not going to know what to do because we'll have a no-hitter guy.
Right. Yeah, then the fans will be mad at Bud Black again and want to run him out of town yet again.
Right. So I want to end this on this fantastic story that you wrote not long ago. The only thing I love as much as baseball is beer. So this really warmed my heart. But just talk a little bit about this A.L. Smith's, I guess that's the name of the company, so this beer company that had paired with Tony Gwynn to unveil a new beer. And Tony actually was able to taste this beer, if I'm not mistaken. So how did that whole thing come about?
Yeah, that was a fun story to write, Allison. And yeah, I'm with you there. Beer and baseball. I'm not sure there's a few things that are better than that. But yeah, it was funny. You know, I talked to the brewer for AleSmith, and he mentioned that you know, local attorney contacted him last March and said, hey, I have a sports celebrity that wants to collaborate with you on a beer. Do you have any idea who it might be? And Peter Zien from AleSmith said, oh, Tony Gwynn, you just guessed, and it was Tony. And so, you know, they took him to Tony's house, and they brought some samples, and Tony tried it, and you know, didn't really know about anything about Tony's taste in beer or anything like that. And as it turns out, Allison, it's crazy. And I talked to Tony Gwynn Jr., who was at the event last Sunday here in San Diego, and Tony Jr. didn't even know about this, really. And this kind of surprised everybody. And, you know, Tony Gwynn Sr., not much of a drinker. And no one can really seem to pinpoint exactly why this was so important to him. And in the story, Peter points out that, and this is interesting. It's like on his final weekend, you know, Tony Gwynn passed away in June. He talked about how proud he was And you know, sort of how fortunate he was that they got to see the fruition of this. You know, he got to sample this beer. The final product of it was finished in early June, and how proud of it he was, and so happy that he did it. And that's really cool. I mean, you know, this was something that was obviously very important to him. No one had any idea that he liked beer, or you know, this is a big craft beer community. It's probably worth pointing out. Yeah, and so they had an event at the end of San Diego Beer Week at Alesmith, which is a very popular brewery here in San Diego, where they sold 6 packs of 12-ounce bottles of the San Diego Pale Ale 394, which, of course, was Tony's batting average in 1994, the strike-shortened season when he came the closest to hitting 400, one of his many batting titles. And, you know, they're going to feature as part of their part of their rotation moving forward, their regular rotation of beers. And it's kind of a hybrid between a extra pale ale and an IPA. So it's got a little hop punch to it, a hop profile, but it's not too hoppy. But I think everyone likes it, and everyone's excited. And Tony's silhouette's kind of is on the label. And it's a neat way, as Tony Gwynn Jr. said, it's a neat way to honor his dad. And it's really fitting for this area, so I think everyone's pretty excited about it.
Pretty awesome. I'm going to have to try the next time I'm there. Corey, thanks so much. We'll be talking to you at the winter meeting. Appreciate your time.
Yeah, anytime, Allison. Thank you.
Visit the official online shop of Major League Baseball at MLB.com/shop for the largest selection of authentic caps, T-shirts, jerseys, hoodies, collectibles, and more. Get your gear straight from the source, the MLB.com shop.